Today I'm talking about transport problems. In transport problems, one of the most famous ones is called the Monte-Cantorobi problems. So here I just quickly mentioned that part. Many of you may already know it. So which means you have a pile of sand, you want to move to some pile of hills in the best way. How to do it? Then mathematically, we want to change this pile of sand to a perfect matter, automata. Then here is another matter, same volume means the total mass the same. Then you want to fear means put forward mu plus mu minus. Best means total work. Then what mean by work is given by here, Fs, right? So the distance time here. So mathematically, it just becomes minimize this problem, minimize the cost of this guy among all transport maps. Okay. Then, in more general case, you want to replace this cost function by more Cx or Psi x, give you zero. And for instance, you can pick x minus y to the power p, so p greater than 1 or greater than 0, and so on. But this problem, in fact, is very difficult, because first, this is highly nonlinear, because this minimizes this size there, but this over here, or you see here, is C over there, that's nonlinear. Also, sometimes you do not have the existence. For example, you put the delta mass on zero, and half at the negative one, half at the one, you cannot find a map, then that's good. So the question becomes very hard. Then, Cantorobi says that don't worry about it, relax. So, how to relax it? Do the relaxation. Instead of looking for maps over there, relax it allows you to allow some balancing over there, which means this part becomes a pervert matter in the product space. Then instead of doing that part, you minimize this part. Over here, the gamma. Gamma is a product space, pervert matter on the product space with the minus mu plus and mu minus. It's called transport plans. And this problem become minimal problems. And existence now is trivial.
Okay. What are these pies?
Pi is the projections. Yeah, projections from the first one, the second one. So then you know, this one you can define the distance called Wolfenstein distance. The distance between matters just the minimum cost. Okay. And the theorem says that this is the distance, and also the topology just a weak star topology. That's good part. And this problem very famous, a lot of applications. So I'm not going to talk about this one today. But this one's very related to other topics, so that's why I mentioned it. Okay, so the question is, should we always define the cost as an integral of a cost function? Sorry. If you come back here, you define the cost looks like that part. Right? The question is, should we always define it this way? Let's go back to the answer, of course, not always. So examples, simplest example. You have two atoms here. I want to move to zero. How will you transport it? Okay. First way, says, okay, I just move this one to here, this one to here. Okay, that's the first way. Move them directly to the destination. The question is, are there any other way? Of course, there's other ways. Put them on some truck and do it. Okay? So this is, V-shaped and Y-shaped. Okay? So in many cases, this Y-shaped might be more cost efficient than V-shaped. Okay? So this is just a phenomenon, right? And because if you look at, compare this V-shaped and Y-shaped, look at the maps. The maps are the same, or plans are the same. So both map these two points to here, that's a map. But the map is the same, but the costs are different, because the costs are given by the functional. Costs are given by the paths, determined by paths. So that's a little bit different here.
So okay. The Y-shaped path, you don't weight the part where they're together extra.
Yeah.
The one truck is one truck.
Yeah, okay. So then the question is that, so this is, said Y might be better than V. So in general, this is a simple case. In general, a ramified, which means branching structure, might be more cost efficient than linear structures. Okay. Because of this one, Examples, of course, we have seen many examples. This morning, the Professor Banavar, the first speakers, right, have give very good introduction to this areas, right? You look at trees, look at yourself, look at outside, channel works, or even ordinary life. For example, I can talk with you individually, cost me 30 minutes each. Or I can invite everyone to be here, right? For me, only 30 minutes here, 30 people, you count it, it's a clear difference, right? So that's why we need to ramify the transportation. Okay, the question that this guy is very common, we need to put it in a more theoretical way. Okay, is this clear? Okay. The question is how to do it. Oh, this is another one, lightly. Ramify transport. But something from zero to bottom here. Okay. So the question is, you give a mu plus and a mu minus. This mu plus and mu minus, general matter, something you won't move from mu plus to mu minus. You want to transport in the y way, not in the v way. The question is how to do it. So first, if you want to do it, you need what do you mean by transport paths? You need a definition of transport paths. What do you mean by that one? Also, you need to define the cost function on the path. Okay, what do you mean? You need a cost function to have the minimization. Okay, and also, in the end, you want this guy, that optimal one, to be nice. You do not want the optimal one to be too bad, otherwise you cannot do anything. Right? You want this guy to be nice. So let's see how to do it. So the idea that I'm not so clever, so let's start with the simplest case, with the things I know how to do it. Okay, which one I know how to do it? Points. I can move points. Okay, so point means atomic matters. The masses of there, the total mass of coins is 1 per bit matters. You put some, this is the A, some point of there, the different mass, B is another one. So the question is how to move this A, this green point, to this red point. Okay. So what's the path? Path should be graph, that's it. Weighted directed graphs. So you have some graphs from here to here. Of course, over here you should satisfy the balance equation, which means total mass flows in should equal to the total mass flows out. That's it, right? So total mass flow in should equal total mass flow out. And let me see, notation path A, B, just the all transport path from A to B. Each transport path just a directed, weighted graph. Is this clear? Simple, right? Everybody can do graphs. Right. Okay, so cost function. Well, this path might be very large. You won't find a Y-shaped or ramified transport path. Okay, you need to define the cost function here. Okay, what's the cost function? Given a graph, each graph you have some weights, each edge you have some weights. Put some power R here times the length. Okay, so this one is very close to the first talk of this morning, right? Over there, I guess you use the gamma. They use A here. And here, I guess you use K. For that K, I don't know quite understand your talk. So maybe I assume your A just is constant. So maybe something, so that you don't worry about that part. For me, I need the length of it. This alpha is to some number less than 1. Why I pick something less than 1? Because x to the power alpha, if alpha less than 1, this guy is concave. Concave means it's better to put things together rather than put it together will be better. So as a result, what happens? This guy will be Y-shaped or ramified one. Okay. Examples: you have two masses zero and more to zero. The only one choice, you can just do this part because it's Y-shaped. Over here, if it's optimal, then it will satisfy the balance equation. Basically, these directions, all these angles, etc., are determined. because it is balanced. If you do the math here, then you do all these angles from here. For instance, if alpha equals 0, you will get 120 degrees. And what's interesting is that if alpha equals half, this part will be 90 degrees. That's something I didn't expect it at first, but turns out to be that one. That will be 90 degrees. Of course, for alpha, you can get different things. Here, it says, okay, for 2 points, to 2 points, well, topologically, you only have these three choices. You can either do that way, or do this way, or this way. That's the only choice you have. And what's happened? This one says that, at first, when you talk about graphs, you may worry about, okay, maybe this one has loops. This one says, on this mass, there's loops on the cycle, loops, these kind of things. Okay, so this is automatically true. If the point that, what do I write? If these have loops, then you can always modify this so that this guy has no, the total cost in this. Okay, it's better to have, do not have loops. It's automatically true. Then we only consider transfer paths contains no cycles. Okay, then this one says if it has no cycles, where is less than 0 to 1, because it's a property matter, then if m just means alpha equals 1, which means if you, this is decreasing function of, decreasing function of alpha, if you simplify this part, that's a decreasing function of alpha. Okay. So this is talk about how to transport points to points. The next question is, what we really care about is, given any probability matters, how to transport the new part to the minus, instead of just point to point. Okay, so what should we do? The idea is that, not too hard, approximation, let's do approximation. I do have to do points to points, atomic matter to points. For this one, I have graphs. Now, this new class, I can do approximate by atomic matters. Here, do the same thing. The question is, can I take a limit of this graph to get something? If this one has a limit, then that will give me a transfer path from this new class to new minus. Okay? So that's this idea. So AIBIGI are called automating graph sequence. Okay? If you have any questions, just ask, okay? Let's see. Then this one just says, how, given any mu, how to approximate it? The easiest way is dyadic approximation. Given a matter mu zero, I just cut. Get the mass zero, you get the direct atomic matters. Right? And this is the dyadic approximation of mu. Right? Then, what else? So how to take limits? So, hold on, names. Oh, well, this is mathematical part. So basically, I use something called geometric matter theory. So view it as a occurrence, or let me see. This is what we write a boundary G equals DR minus AI. Let me skip this part. I guess many of you don't know much about geometric matter theory. So basically, let me see. Differential forms, then define currents. Currents is just a dual of differential forms. Then boundary of this one can be defined just like distributions. Then you can define the mass of them, when it's normal with the mass of this kind of finite. Okay, example of the occurrence is that some manifolds, oriented some manifolds, that's this first one you use very, very often. Also, you can define differential forms, that's another one. The other one used very often is called rectifiable occurrence, which means it is a rectifiable set. This just called countable many pieces of, say, smooth parts. Take countable many, put them together, then in the minor theoretical things, which means up to minus zero things. Of zero, you have orientation and the weights, that's it. So let's forget about that part. The of zero, the point that you can take numbers. So zero, you can take a limit of zero. So let's try examples. Let me use this here. Suppose you have the back matter of zero, of point zero, how to do it? One way that I just do it in this way. If you put out here, then total cost will be infinite. And you say, okay, well, that's an infinite cost, I don't have so much money. So the other attempt is that in this ramified way. If you try this ramified way, you calculate it, the total cost will be finite. Then, this is the hard dimension of things.
Is
this the optimal one?
Not yet.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later, yeah. So at least you can do it this way, right? Yeah. Then for high dimensions, you can do it this way. Move this one split into four, then do it, and keep on doing. Then you calculate the total cost of this one. Says, okay, what's the total cost of this one? This guy is finite. If this number is less than one, which means this guy less than zero, means the alpha is greater than 1 plus O n. Which means if alpha is greater than this number, this guy will be finite. Then this one says if alpha is greater than this number, then you always, for any mu, you'll find a path from mu to a point with finite cost.
What is m? You know?
I'm sorry, m is the dimension of the ambient space. Oh, you know, this x, right? The capital x is the subset of Rn.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the dimension of that space. This M plays a very important role. We'll talk about that later. Okay. So this, then you get an existence. Just the way to prove it, just the direct methods. Take a minimizing sequence because this guy is fine. Have two cycles. This guy is This mass is less than this M alpha mass. Then here you have the compactness, so which means this will converge to something. Get the existence of the optimal one. Okay. So using this one, you can define the distance. So for any new path to minimize, you can define the distance of this one to be here. And the point that this guy is a distance. Okay. You can change this guy is a distance. And also, it is a weak star topology. Give the same topology. If alpha is greater than zero. Then talk about what do we mean by optimal path. Okay, optimal path. So if you pass mu mass here, you get AI here, BI here, you have a graph GI from AI to BI. Okay, then the point is that if each of this guy is a minimizer, then the limiter of this one will automatically be a minimizer. Therefore, when you talk about when taking the limits, you just assume this graph to be optimal. Because if you want to start the properties of this guy, optimal one, you assume this graph is optimal. Okay, clear. Then you can do the error estimate that says that for any, the point that here is true for any AI and BI. Therefore, you can choose your favorite one, say biotic approximations. Okay, you will give that, always give any optimal one. So given the mu and n x, you can find this guy. This says the error of this one is less than c lambda a, lambda some number less than one. Therefore, this guy, if n is very big, this error is very tiny. And here it says that if you use the optimal of this g a in compared with here, this error is very tiny. Okay. Then this guy says this guy length space, which means so how to understand optimal transfer paths? This guy, just like the geodesics. In geodesics, you remind you of the entry point have a geodesic, right? This is, device here, just think about say 5 points there, 3 points there. What's the geodesic looks like? From this 5 point to that 3 point, or infinite point to that infinite point. That's what we do. So given by this optimal transfer paths. And this guy's the length space, which means this parameterization will give you just the length of it. Okay, what's that? Then to the atomic approximation. So you have 2 points there, 1 point there. Okay, this is the first approximation, then 4 points, eight points, and so on. You begin to have this kind of shapes comes out. Then change the alphas, you get different things. The alpha again, get different shapes. Okay. And here, this is if you have the back matrix of zero, to drive my way, you might get something like that kind of thing. This kind of thing, of course, looks like trees, right? So this is the optimal kind of path where we look, something looks like that one. This says, okay, different mass, you might have different things. And what else? Okay. How much time do I have? Still. Okay, that's what I like. 30 minutes, right? Okay. So now let's just quickly mention this part. So transport paths and transport plans. So you have some atomic matter there, atomic matter there. You can define either a transport plan or a transport path. So what's the relation between this one and that one? Transport plan just the pervasive matter of the product space. So if you do this size and that size, the margins, first margin is mu plus, second margin is mu minus, that's the transport plan. And here your path observed. Okay. This guy and this guy are, so each transport path, okay, you can define a lot of matrix. So each element is just a one curve. Okay? This one to that one, just one of these elements. That element is a curve. So the point that this guy, this path and plan are compatible if the sum of them is a dot product of this guy here. So that's just in this example. This guy can be decomposed as 1, 4, 1, 2, of 0. If you just think about that part and that part of 0. Think about these are coefficients of the plans. This is the graph of zero. So that's it. Okay, if you can do it, then that's compatible. But for if you change it, so one of them is compatible, one of them is not. For example, this one says x3 to y1 is 1/4. But you see the loop path from here to here. It's 7/4. Okay. Even this is allowable transport plan, but this one and this one are not compatible. But this plan is compatible with it. Okay. Then you just consider things that are compatible. So Uij, this plan just means amount of mass from xi to yj. Gij is the actual path from xi to yj, the actual path. How does it move? Okay. Then this some results says over there you will have some the existence of this kind of things. Let's skip it. Okay. Then the question comes back to how nice is this guy? How nice is this transport path? So this one says first this one is optimal one can be written in this form. So this T1. This optimal can be run in the forms. But more than that, if this is optimal, then think about this mu plus, this mu minus, some path here. Then locally, if you look at it, this part just a graph. That, so you don't have very bad paths. Locally, this guy is just a unit graph. Okay. You don't have bad paths over there. Okay. Then the question is, what happens here? You need to transport this path to this kind of point, right? The path is supported on this path. You see, okay, how do I move this, the total mass here to this kind of point? You need to transport mu plus to mu minus zero, right? So how to see that path? So the first observation is that, okay, this, the support of T may not necessarily be one-dimensional nearby its boundary because just one that back matter to a point, then you'll have trouble. So the question is how to do that part? Okay, the answer is that I just look at what happens in the nature. Suppose this is the back matter, this is the point. How does the nature do it? Nature said, I use this kind of weighing series. This is my path, transport path. This weapon is my transport path. Okay. So this nature provides a wonderful solution for us. So the question is how to read it mathematically, right?
So yeah. This has to do with the smoothness of the boundary of T?
Yeah. The boundary of T is this Lebesgue matter. T
In the leaf, what is supposed to be not one-dimensional? The boundary of the leaf?
First I have the capital T. T is a one-dimensional thing. So you have just its boundary is this magnetic matter. Along boundary is this point.
The surface area of the leaf.
Yes, the surface area.
It's two-dimensional.
It's a surface.
So you want to feed a two-dimensional surface area with a one-dimensional network of veins.
What am I supposed to be worried about, the not necessarily one-dimensional? The boundary?
No, the surface area.
That's the surface area of this part. And this is the mu plus, this is mu minus. And this veins put them together, this one number thing, that's the path. This is the path from this, so here looks like two dimensional thing, but for me it's just a matter. That's for me the zero dimensional.
So to try to understand the problem, maybe suppose I have a region where I want to transport, and that region is in two dimensions, let's say, is a compact set with a smooth boundary.
Yeah, okay.
Am I in trouble because the set itself is two dimensional, or am I fine because the boundary of the set is one dimensional?
I mean, this has nothing to do with the boundary of the set. It
does not. Okay.
It has nothing to do with the path. So you have that two dimensional things that's measured, right? Then, so how do I transport it? Approximately by the points. For the points, I don't have to transport it then to the limit. So just like this previous thing.
So it's the question of the dimension of the support of T near its boundary.
Yeah. Then the question is, you get how to read it. You look here, this looks like density is higher than the others. So the way that for me, just with the narrow set, basically looks like, okay, think about all the the place where the density is greater than some numbers. So look for the multiplicity which is greater than some small number. By looking that way, you see when number is zero, you get everything. You cannot see anything. But if number is greater than zero, what you get just the one-dimensional graphs. That's look at here, just this random thing comes out. Okay. So the idea is that look for that set, then each of these sets will be looks like graphs, sort of like graphs, and the nice properties of zero, and everywhere else. Then you take the limit of, let's see feedback. So a nice question is that can we use this idea to understand the dynamic of trainees? We borrow the idea from the trainees to can we get some feedback?
Okay. What would be alpha?
I'm sorry?
What would be the value of alpha then? Alpha, your parameter alpha.
We'll talk about it. You for active trainees, we'll talk about it. So let's give this a proof. Okay, so think about this trainee will grow from one point to here, to five cells, and then increase the cells, and get this in, and then you will get this part. So how to understand this one? These veins, that's my T. This two-dimensional thing, that's my mu plus. What's my mu minus? That's just gamma. That's the thing. Of course, you need to grow from almost zero. Just keep on growing, and you'll get this part. Then you choose different parameters, or you will get different things. Okay, the same, the change parameters, get these things. Mm-hmm. We'll keep on growing like that. Okay, then here just compare this one with the actual one, and it looks like okay. That looks like very, very similar. Right. Okay. And what else? So this says maples. I can get maples over there. So you can look at it, how many of them here. This one, zero, zero, here. This part is here. And here you have one color. This part do not have it. For me, I only have, both of them have these colors.
Sorry. The shape of the boundary comes out of your parameter?
You mean shape of this one?
Yes.
It automatically comes out.
From the alpha and beta?
Yeah. So that point that here, The philosophy is the same. Just start from one point, want to grow, but every time I will call, I want to minimize the total cost, transport cost, that's it.
But you also want to maximize the area at the same time.
That's right. Maximize, that's right. Every time you want, that's right, you want to maximize the area.
So in each time step, you're trying to maximize the ratio or the difference of the area and the total transport cost? Or
No, I have a lot of parameters. That's right. That's it. Absolute. That's three parameters. Alpha, beta, basic control the growth of the absolute, basic says okay. So, so every time I will compare, says that what happens if I add a new cell? If I add a new cell, okay, the advantage of, what happens, you have some cost, and also you have some advantage, get some revenue, and you can have expense. If the revenue is greater expense, you will take it. If the revenue is less expense, then you won't take it. So, and that's number, so that one is revenue is controlled by this epsilon. If the you just every time you increase the epsilon, say okay, because of weather means that I want to looks like I have more advantages now, so I just collecting two more cells, then it will grow. Then when epsilon, of course, in the natural, of course, this is bounded, right? It won't. So this the advantage. This one's epsilon varies. Okay, if you add one cell, how much revenue you can get? This is, that part will be measured by epsilon times H squared. H squared is the area. Epsilon times that part. So it basically says, okay, if there's no advantage to add new cells, then I'll just stop.
But the thing can go indefinitely, in principle.
If epsilon goes infinity, of course, this is can grow infinitely. If epsilon fixed, then they will stop.
What was beta already? What was
beta? Beta is a lot of parameters. Okay, hold on. Maybe I can explain a little earlier. Some other talks. Let's try this guy. Philips, right? Let's explain who. Let's see. Yeah. Here is a lot of parameters. So basically, when you transport it, you rotate it, you say that if you transport in this direction, the cost might be cheaper. But even you don't want to transport in that direction. So basically, beta will come. To cover that part, say, okay, what's the difference between that one and that? So that's a lot of parameters compared to it. Yeah, so there's another one. Then, perhaps. Yeah, this is the map house. Okay. Then, here's a lot of questions. Says given a mu and a nu, when will this guy be finite? Then we choose this mu to be the direct mass. Okay. When mu is not the back matters, we call that, we do these calculations, figure out that if alpha greater than this one, this will be finite. If not, then it's not. Therefore, dimension here equals the infimum of this part. Okay. What's interesting is that let's look at what happened to the common set. What is the concept? Okay, can you see it? So of course there's a concept here. Then this guy associated with so I want to do optimization to this guy. First I pick this point, then I pick this two and this guy. Basically, this is the A1, A2, A3, this is A1, A2, A3, and so on. This gives an optimization to the concept. So each of the ways of them, this is a probability matter, so I put half here, this one force here, and three up. Okay, so this one gives an approximation to a common sense. So if you calculate, okay, I want to transpose this concept to a point, how will I do it? Well, I just move these two points to the center. That's what this one will do, which is there. And here, I move these two points to that part. That part, this part, and here, to here, here, and throughout. That keep on doing, you get a path from this point to the concept. So let's calculate what's the cost of this one. Cost of them is given by this way. And then say, when is this guy finite? Realize if this number is greater than log 2 or log 3, this is finite. What is log 2 or log 3? Of course, that's the dimension of the concept, right? And here, the point that alpha, if you calculate alpha here is negative. So at first, we only assume alpha from 0 to 1. But now, if you allow alpha to negative, it makes more sense. I mean, you can deal with the concept now. Let's see. Let's do it again. This is the final concept. Do the same calculations. You do okay, I calculated, then realize it's the same thing. Second dimension thing. How about self-similar sets? Then you have a matrix A, set A over there. Suppose this guy found the catches, copies A1, A2, A3. Right? Then, suppose those are center of A, I can transform this guy to here. Then for each piece, I do about similar things. And you know, each AI is self-similar. You still get these things, you get a path. Let's calculate what's the path of it, the cost of this one. You calculate it, says, okay, this guy find out if this one is greater than this number. This is the self-similar dimension of the set. So looks like, well, this one seems to be very interesting, right? Let's do for any mu and nu at infimum of this mu and nu, here nu is not necessarily the delta mass. The point that this guy forms a pseudo matrix. So what is a pseudo matrix? Pseudo matrix is a matrix except one thing. This d mu nu equals zero does not mean mu equals nu. Why? Just think about n two points, delta x and y. Then for any alpha, what's the cost? That's just a length. That's just a length from x to plus y. That's what always finite. So you see, this one is always finite. So this one is always equal zero. Therefore, this guy equals zero, but x, of course, does not equal y. All the other conditions you check says, okay, that's fine. It will satisfy. So because of this one, we can define the equivalent class, right? It's necessary. If it equals zero, I define this one to be equivalent. So the name says that if they are equivalent, then this pseudo matrix doesn't change. That's a good part. Then you can define D on the equivalent class of this one. So this one is D defined in that way, of course, becomes a matrix on the equivalent class of probability matters. And remember, we have dimension. What's the dimension? So this, in general, d mu to delta zero will be between the Hausdorff dimension and the box dimension. That's something you can prove. Then, if this support is nice enough, then so for the surface, for self-similar sets, fractals, these kind of things, they are equal. Okay, dimension equals the distance. So I call this dimensional distance. Okay, so what does this one mean? You know, for this one says dimension. What do you mean? How to understand dimension? Dimension is of a set just the distance from that set to a point. That's it. That's what the dimension means. So this is a new understanding of the dimension, right? So this, so you can use this one to say, okay, which is, you know, dimension is better. Well, for nice sets, all kinds of dimensions are agrees. For bad sets, you know, maybe not different. So which one is better? Let's look at, what's the distance. This one gives another meaning to it. Okay, I guess I will just stop. Let me just stop here.